This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of October 19th, 2020, brought to you by the law firm Krieg DeVault. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. When last we spoke with Eddie Somm, the restaurant industry had ground to a halt during the initial onslaught of COVID-19. This was late March, and Indiana restaurants had been ordered to temporarily halt dine-in service. This amounted to an existential crisis for Somm's restaurant group, which ran 16 eateries in central Indiana and 3 catering operations. And you know the restaurants, from those branded as Somm's, like Somm's Place or Somm's Smokehouse, or those under the Big Lug brand, or one-off concepts like Leader House and Half Leader south of Rotterdam. Somm's restaurant group had employed about 425 people, about 90% of which it was forced to lay off early in the pandemic. In our podcast from March 30th, Eddie Somm, who owns the family of restaurants with his father, Ed Somm, discussed an effort to refocus operations and get more employees back on the payroll. The organization began making meals for the not-for-profit food relief group Second Helpings in its cafeteria space downtown in the One America building, and it developed a series of marketplaces where customers could order pre-prepared foods as well as items you would normally get at a grocery store, like produce or canned goods or cleaning supplies, and yes, even toilet paper. At the time, Somm said that in the best case scenario, the pandemic would end after about 4 months and Somm's would reopen its restaurants and rehire all of its staff. Obviously, that did not happen, but I wanted to follow up and find out what did. As it stands today, 12 of Somm's 16 restaurants are operating again with in-person dining, and the restaurant group has roughly 300 employees. Now, when we talk about restaurants that technically have closed, and I'll throw in some air quotes here, it's worth noting that these situations are a bit fluid. For example, in a couple of instances, 2 restaurants that operated adjacent to each other essentially have consolidated. We can say very clearly that Somm's Tavern downtown never reopened, and Somm's Cafeteria downtown will close at the end of this month. Somm's was able to secure several loans through the Federal Payroll Protection Program, aka PPP, that more than likely will be forgiven. The loans totaled hundreds of thousands of dollars, but they weren't in any way a long-term solution. The money has been spent, and Somm's is headed into the winter months now, worried about how it will survive without outdoor dining. Most restaurateurs are wondering the same thing about their locations. And as you'll hear in our new interview, Eddie is certain that a large wave of restaurants industry-wide will close without more business stimulus from the federal government. Here's our conversation. I'm happy to welcome to the IBJ Podcast virtual studio again, Eddie Somm. Thanks for making time today.
Yep, appreciate it. Thanks.
Before we get into some of the finer details, I was just curious about what the last 7 months have been like for you. How do you describe this experience of being like a major small business owner during a once in a century public health crisis?
Tumultuous is the word. There's a lot of other words that you could use, but it's a roller coaster, and there's no one really knows what they're doing. So they're trying to figure it out, and that's the most positive I can be, is everyone's trying and it's tumultuous.
So yeah, and you announced, I think, late September that the 2 locations that were downtown, the Somm's Cafeteria, which is inside One America Tower, would close at the end of this month.
Tavern's done. The restaurant in Gibson, but the catering operation's still helping where we had obligations.
Yeah, and Somm's Tavern, which was inside the historic Gibson building. Did that ever reopen? I remember that closed early.
No, it was dependent on people being downtown and businesses specifically being downtown. And they weren't, and I don't know when they will be back, and we just don't have the luxury of waiting.
And you used the One America location as a hub for catering operations, mm-hmm. And where will those operations go?
So we have a couple things that we're doing right now. We do have one that is, we work with Cathedral, and they have a giant kitchen over by some baseball fields, their home fields that we run off of. So we do a lot of catering out of there. We still make thousands of meals a week for Second Helpings there. So it's been really good. The other place is going to be Leader House. So Leader House, we're going to have a 230-ish person event space and a fully operational catering kitchen. And then we have a restaurant inside of the Prairie View Golf Course with some of our business partners. And that will be a catering hub as well. We do a lot of golf outings and stuff like that, but it'll be fully operational for Fishers and Carmel and Noblesville and those types of locations. So, you know, we've been successful in moving it. And the One America location was fine, but honestly, I don't think it was ideal for us as we continue to grow. I think we actually needed a few spots to work with.
How many meals has Sam's made for Second Helpings since the pandemic started?
Hundreds of thousands. A lot.
How does that work? Do they pay you to do that? Are you guys doing that pro bono?
Yeah, so they have a budget per meal that they kind of work with on. Here's what they can afford to spend, and this is what we have to work within. So, you know, we use food that could become waste. We work with our distributors on stuff where they're trying to move it or they have a bulk discount, whether that's, you know, frozen chickens that they need to get out of inventory, bread that's close to date, you know. So we're pretty well set up to do it. I mean, we're used to doing large catering jobs. This is more just about doing it on a budget where, you know, Second Helpings needs 5,000 meals, but they can only afford to spend $3 on a meal or $2.50 on a meal. We have to figure out how to do that for them while still being able to basically just pay our labor. We don't profit off of it. It pays for our labor, it pays for our rent, and then we put the rest out on that cost. You know, it's been a positive for both and allowed us to keep some people on.
So most of your restaurants are in Marion County or Hamilton County. Mm-hmm. These counties have been operating on different schedules as mm-hmm. far as social distancing and how much occupancy they're allowed inside and outside. Can you real quick review for us the limits right now in Hamilton? Are they completely?
I'm honestly not 100% sure. We operate off of Marion County guidelines. So we're in Attica. We operate off of Marion County guidelines. Same goes for Bloomington. You know, we're in Monroe now. And so, you know, we operate off Marion County guidelines all the time because they're usually more strict. Now, we make sure those meet the other people's guidelines. And as long as that's the case, then we will operate off of, if it's stricter, whatever Marion County is doing. So
what is the Marion County guideline right now?
You know, right now we're still at 50% occupancy. There's still the space you have to spread out 6 feet plus between guests and tables. You know, tables, guests being the main thing. It can't just be like a table 6 feet away from another table. How close are the chairs going to get? You know, limited bar service. You're supposed to keep walk-up bar service to an absolute minimum. So we still don't fill growlers, you know, up at a bar. We still have a cocktail server, not a bartender that you walk up to. You're supposed to keep table seatings to, I believe, 12 or less. I'm not exactly sure where that's at. And then the new occupancy on events, I want to say is somewhere in, you know, it's like 75 or something like that. So, you know, there's still some occupancy guidelines there.
So it's 50% on the inside. What is it like for the patio seating?
It's the same thing. You're still supposed to keep it to 50% occupancy based on what your fire code is. So, you know, if you had a space that was huge, but only was approved for 50 people, then it's 25 people.
Are you finding that people are still more interested in patio seating than indoor seating?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. I mean, people are eating indoors again. I think it's just, it's a trust thing. You know, I think a lot of people haven't done it yet. And so if they're even going to do it, I don't know. But the people who have done it, it's something that they come in on slower days. They'll call ahead and let us know or see where we're at. They're a little bit more cautious, but I think everything's a learning curve with this. They just want to trust you and see that you're doing it right the first time. So it's easier to do that outside. But we've had customers who've seen that we're trying really hard outside. And now they're like, okay, we'll eat in. If it's 50 degrees, we'll go inside because, you know, we see that you're doing it the right way. But I don't know. It's so hard to tell. I don't know. We've had a lot of good weather lately. We're lucky in that sense.
Now, some bar and nightclub owners in Marion County filed a class action lawsuit against the city and the county health department saying the county's restrictions for occupancy and operation were arbitrary and unreasonable. Do you have an opinion on that? Do you think that they were too strict?
I don't know. I don't think they know. I mean, I think it's in 20 years, there's going to be a book called, you know, 2020 on 2020. And it's going to talk about how certain groups were idiots and certain groups weren't. And I don't know. I mean, we're just trying to lead based on what people smarter than us and their occupancies are doing. Cause other people don't run restaurants. So, you know, we have to look at what makes sense from a, you know, people who study pandemics, people who study viruses, people who study air movement indoors, people who study, you know, how germs spread, you know, but it's like, yeah, I'm going to listen to that person. And then I'm going to try to show how a restaurant can operate under that. It's easy to point fingers right now because we're all pretty upset. I think it's kind of arbitrary.
So at the moment, what is revenue for Sam's Restaurant Group, like compared to the same time last year? Like if we said, take September, what was your revenue for September 2019? And then what is it like this year?
I mean, it's still down dramatically, probably 50% plus. You know, with that being said, we've gotten smarter about some things and operations. Our food costs are significantly improved. You know, the cost of actually operating logistics for delivery and for online ordering have gotten a lot better for us. So there's improvements in there. It's not all bleak. But yeah, the sales revenue itself is pretty significantly down. I don't see that changing. Some restaurants are great. Half Liter is enormous, and we've added tables outside because we are allowed to have that occupancy. So it's done really well. And Big Lug's done relatively well. Our restaurant in West Clay has done really well with the additional space of about, you know, 30 seats for a patio and delivery. So, you know, it's not all of them, but, you know, like I have a restaurant, Sam's Place. It fits 110 people. So we're at 55 guests. And the majority of my customers were a little older, you know, 65 plus. You know, we have four tables outside before COVID. So we don't see anyone out there because that's where we do our curbside pickup. So, you know, yeah, our sales are down, you know, 60, 70%, you know, week over week. So, you know, it's bleak in some areas, but it's just about how you get smart with it. And, you know, we were lucky to receive a little bit of PPP money, and we tried to use it in a way that kept, you know, the people who were dedicated to seeing this through employed and, you know, trying to give them the tools they needed to succeed.
Yeah, I'm sure some operational costs are probably down. I know that this is a super complex question because there's so many moving factors, including like the PPP that you mentioned, and we'll talk about that in a second, but can you say that you're profitable now, or are you still losing money? What's the outlook?
It's profitable, but it's not, you know, there's some positive cash flow. It's not profitable. I mean, we're still a little ways from being on the trajectory we needed for the, you know, the leveraging we had with some of our bank partners and the growth that we thought we would have in 2020 that didn't really grow the way we expected it to. But there is some positive cash flow for us to, you know, see projects through and to start thinking about life after COVID, where hopefully there's some regular things that we had banked on being.
All right, well, let's take a quick break so we can hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Creek DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Creek DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Creek DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.creekdevault.com.
Okay, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. We're catching up with Eddie Sam of Sam's Restaurant Group about how the family of eateries is faring during the pandemic.
So here's a $6 million question. So late fall, early winter, I'm told will be absolutely critical for the restaurant industry. It basically will be the mother of all tipping points. Mm-hmm. Am I reading that right? Can you explain what you guys are anticipating?
Well, I mean, there has to be another stimulus package if the government is interested in keeping small businesses afloat. And some will be fine, but when you're talking a 50-50 coin flip on every restaurant, you know, that just depends on if people think it's important or not. I think every restaurant you look at is hanging on. And the ones who are doing really well, it's either a complete anomaly or they have ignored the rules. And that is a whole different conversation we can get into about the bar owner telling me that I'm just not doing it right, when in fact that is the opposite of what it really is. You're just ignoring it and hoping you don't get in trouble. So yeah, everyone's going to struggle. Anyone who got PPP money and used it according to the guidelines, it's gone. I mean, you know, you've had to use it if you did it correctly. And who knows what the weather is going to hold. I mean, if there's a rainy Sunday, let's just take half liter here where I'm sitting, a nice Saturday, Sunday, a nice weekend day, we're going to do about $18,000 to $20,000 in revenue, which is really good for our company for, you know, on a location basis. If it rains, we're going to do six. And that means that everyone gets called off and all the food that we bought, we have to figure out how to use it without wasting it. And everything we had planned on for that next week purchasing has to be completely scrapped. And whatever inventories we had to figure out how we're going to use in the next 3 to 5 days. All that happens on a weather forecast. And that's really hard. And maybe they move inside, I don't know, but no one's had to be forced to go inside yet. So in this first 42 degree day, which is coming, when it's actually here, we're going to have to see what happens. And there's a lot of restaurants who aren't as lucky as us where they have great distributor relationships and large patios and you know, relationships built with their customers over a 30-year period. There's some restaurants out there who it's like you're the last of their worries. And the second something comes in, cold weather, kids get taken back out of school, job calls you back into work, you're the first thing to go off of their budget. So it just comes down to, are you important enough for the United States to help stabilize? And if the answer is no, then yeah, there's going to be a lot of people that close. And if the answer is yes, then hopefully that bridges the gap and people are smart with their money to keep their businesses open for the next 6 months.
So without additional stimulus, we could very well see a wave of closures for restaurants.
Well, no, you will see a wave of closures if there is not stimulus money. There will be a large amount of people who have 0% chance of making it, and the chains will thrive, and the grocery stores will thrive, and to get back in the restaurant industry will be astonishingly hard, which is where we were in 2006, 2010. You know, we just were a chain city, and we were fast food city, and we were food deserts, which we still are. I mean, you know, I don't know. I think it's a big step backwards that is going to take years and years from a cultural standpoint, from convincing your friends to move back to Indianapolis, from convincing a college kid at IU that Indianapolis is this thriving, fun city to be in, and you should grow here with a family and a business and stuff like that. I don't know. I'm not an economics major, but I do know that restaurants play a very big role in making your city vibrant. So hopefully our government and our state and, you know, our federal government and our state and our city keep seeing the value in what we do. But if they don't, I'm not going to sit here and call them idiots. They're just going to miss it. And, you know, I think they'll find out one day that they will.
For the folks who aren't super familiar with stimulus, was it April-ish? I think the federal government started the Payroll Protection Program, which provided forgivable loans, or what they suppose were going to be forgivable loans for businesses to help pay for employee-related expenses. And you guys applied for some. I know you received some. Can you kind of ballpark, I mean, how much money you were able to get in loans through that program?
You know, we received most of what we asked for. A couple locations were late on our applications and, you know, just not even late, just kind of got jumbled with everyone applying at the same time. But we got enough to pay payroll for a couple months and to bring some people back and really get our marketing going for delivery and online ordering and our grocery store. And that really helped launch that was, okay, even if there's no sales, we can hopefully pay some people to be here. I think the part with the PPP that's crucial for people to understand with small business was it wasn't enough money to operate and be profitable. You had to still operate in a profitable manner. You still had to have positive cash flow, because if you didn't, then yeah, these were just going to very, very small amount get you through, and you were going to use it up really quick, and then here comes the crunch. So you had to be profitable. And we were lucky in that regard to get to a point where our revenues were going up and our cost of operations were down, and slowly but surely, you know, we were able to use that PPP money to pay people and cash, you know, keep that money for times as it got tough. So we're set up for a few good months in the wintertime where even if it slows down more than we think it's going to slow down, we'll be okay. But that chopping block's coming. The hard figure that we got, you know, we clearly get more than a person down the street, you know, fair or not. Our revenues are high. Our revenues completely collapsed. We have 16 locations. So, you know, we tried to use it as best we could and get people to work.
So, yeah, I checked the database and I saw three SOMS entities. Assuming each one was a different restaurant. Is that probably
yeah.
right?
And then yeah, there's three different ownership groups kind of based on what I do, what my father does, and what the catering side of the company is.
Okay. So it was those three. Government ballparks these between $150,000 and $350,000.
Yeah, I've been that ballpark. Okay. Yeah.
Let's say Congress and the government doesn't want to do any stimulus. What does SOMS Restaurant Group look like in February?
That's a good question. I know that we would be based on how November went. I mean, November is going to be cold. The holidays, you know, we have things like our coffee cake subscription and gift card sales and delivery for catering jobs. If those stay steady, you know, we won't be as profitable. They'll probably be, you know, the people like myself and my dad and the people, you know, the operators of our company will probably not make what we make right now. You know, we'll have to get tight, but we're already pretty tight. But if November's slow, then yeah, it's going to be bad. Yeah. It's going to be bad for everybody.
Are you going to look at like patio seating, like literally on a day-to-day basis? Like, hey, it's above 40 today, even though it's December 27th.
Last Saturday, it was like 55 at 8 o'clock, and we used $400 worth of propane from 8 until 11 p.m. So no, we're not going, it's so expensive. It's just not easy to do. It's not easy to heat up tables. And even then, if the wind blows, well, then it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's just still freezing cold. And, you know, your food comes out and it's cold in 5 minutes. And so then you're mad that your food was cold. It's just a bad experience. Mm. So, and we could try, but it's expensive to operate it. It's expensive to serve it. You still have to have a server on for a section and you got to pay them to do it. And then they have one person sit down. So, you know, they didn't make any money. We didn't make any, I don't know. I get it. You know, I hear people all the time that I get emails about, oh, if you did this, it would work. And it's like, no, I mean, I know I appreciate the effort on trying to inform you on how we can make it work, but outdoor dining is about to get hit pretty hard.
Is there a day at which you're just going to pull the plug on outdoor dining?
I mean, not completely. If it's 55 degrees in December, I mean, you can bet that we're going to be open.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. It just needs to be warm enough.
Yeah. But if I see tomorrow's 42 degrees, I mean, yeah, I'm going to tell people, look, you got to come inside. We're not, right. You know, you can sit out there, but like, we're not going to sit here and act like this is the experience we want you to have. We can't do it at 42 degrees. We can't have eight heaters on you.
So there's a heat wave in January, 50 degrees every day. It's a possibility.
Oh yeah. We're partying. Yeah.
Right on.
We're turning the music up and going.
When we last spoke, this was the end of March. And the restaurant group had pulled off a really impressive pivot. So although all the restaurants at that moment were closed, I think except for the one in Attica, you'd taken, mm-hmm. I think, five of the locations and created what you would call these marketplaces and pantries. And mm-hmm. folks could order not only pre-prepared food, but stuff that you would associate with like a grocery store, like produce. Mm-hmm. Are you still offering that as a service? Is that still working out for you?
We don't really offer it as a full service anymore, no. We still do like family packs and stuff you can buy in large format to feed your family. But as grocery stores evened out and people started to learn, you know, how to shop and times to shop that were safe, it kind of became obsolete for us to do that. We're by a couple grocery stores here. I mean, it's kind of sad that Broderville Kroger's closing, but, you know, we have the Fresh Market and Fresh Time. There's a Kroger on 65th Street. Where I'm at Big Lug, there's a Whole Foods, a Kroger, a Target, an Aldi, soon to be a Total Wine. And, you know, it's like, I'm not going to compete with them. So we've gone back to making food, carry out, prepared meals, stuff that's already done, ready to go and eat. And that's what we're good at. So, you know, we're ready to turn the switch again if it's needed. And, you know, there's a rush on grocery stores and people not going out again, or we see conversion rates at 7-10%, you know, for COVID, then yeah, we're ready to go back and do it again.
What's the main thing right now just keeping you awake at night?
I sleep really well. So
do you really?
Oh yeah. I'm a sleeper. If you work 100 hours a week, when you get a chance to sleep, you just got to sleep. You just got to shut it down. I'd say the thing that I think about the most on how I can get in touch with people is education. I mean, just how can we continue to be a leader in opening restaurants? There's a way to do it that's right, and there's a way to do it that's wrong. Ignoring everything isn't the right way to do it. I mean, you're not proving anything. You're just putting people at risk. But there is a way to open back up in a way that makes your staff confident and makes the guests confident. So continuing to do that, it's hard because every day there's someone who comes in here or if you have 2,000 people a day who come to one of your restaurants, you know, the chances of one of them being sick is not low. So are you taking measures to make sure that your staff is safe, that your staff is doing the right thing, that customers are aware of the risk and that they need to participate in lowering that risk? And that's just education, and it's constantly harping on it. And it's not taking the easy route, which is, yeah, fine, you don't have to have a mask. Yeah, fine, you can go inside. Yeah, fine, you can have a 20 top. That's the easy way out. And you know, so how we can continue to be a leader in opening restaurants safely, that's the number one game for us.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Eddie. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you having me as always.
My thanks again to Eddie Somm. Before you get on with the rest of your week, I want to point out a few strong stories in this week's edition of IBJ. Mickey Shuey reports that telecom companies are setting up 5G antennas by the hundreds in neighborhoods across Indianapolis, escalating tensions with residents who complain that they have little say over where they're built. Anthony Shutley explains how Broadable-based tech firm Covidio has leveraged its first steps into higher education last year into a thriving new business line thanks to changes in how colleges are operating during the pandemic. And Lindsay Erdody explores how the northern suburbs in central Indiana have become a much more competitive battleground for state Republicans representing those districts. You'll find all these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say, it's quite a bit easier to access all of IBJ's award-winning business content when you have a subscription. It works out to about $2 per week, which is a fair price for as much as you'll learn about Central Indiana and what's coming next. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. And thanks again for making the time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.